Before we get started here, we just want to tell you we will be talking about difficult subject matter that might be disturbing for some listeners. This is a podcast about sexual abuse. There's also some swearing.
Of the individual all around, and the Americans could lose the team gold.
It's July 23rd, 1996. I'm 11. My little sister and I are jumping on my grandma's slip-covered couches, watching the Olympics. The U.S. women's gymnastics team is kicking ass. Back in 96, they'd never won team gold. They needed one last thing to win. A really good score on the vault. Carrie Strug is the last to go. She's short, got a pixie haircut, and now she's the only one who can win the team gold. On her first try, Carrie Strug botches the landing. And it's right on her butt.
I don't know the last time Carrie Strug did something like that. This is her event.
I didn't understand the scoring, but I knew falling was really bad.
This is scary.
She is limping. Carrie is hurt.
Her coaches say she's got to get back out there. She's only got one more shot. Carrie walks back to the vault, limps a little, and her eyes are focused.
She knows what to do. She will go when she is ready.
Carrie stretches her arms all the way up, takes a couple of breaths, and then barrels towards the vault like her ankle doesn't even hurt. She sticks the landing beautifully. But as the crowd goes nuts, Carrie falls to her knees, crawls away from the vault.
Carrie Strug is hurt. She is hurt badly.
She winces, holds back tears. Her coaches pick Carrie up, help her walk off the competition floor. And then her score comes in.
We have got to find out. A 9.712. She has done it. Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team.
The crowd is freaking out. Carrie is not. She's clearly in a lot of pain. On that TV screen, there's a young trainer helping to hold Carrie up. I got her, he says. Pause that. That guy right there. That's Larry Nassar. We didn't know then what we know now, that hundreds of women and girls would come forward to accuse him of sexual abuse. Larry Nassar will go on to become one of the worst serial pedophiles in U.S. sports history. But right now, in this moment, he's a baby-faced, up-and-coming trainer with the Olympic team. This moment will launch his career. He'll be one of the most respected doctors in Olympic gymnastics. And that's where we're going to start this story, with Larry, the good guy. From Michigan Radio and NPR, I'm Lindsay Smith.
And I'm Kate Wells. This is Believed.
You were lucky if you had an injury where you got to go see Larry.
I started seeing Larry Nassar at the age of 8, right here in my hometown of Lansing.
Pain, it comes to me, the pain goes away. Like I've been called the body whisperer.
Larry gave us gifts, backpacks, shirts, a water bottle.
I heard words such as, you'll love him. He can fix anyone or anything.
And that's how I've made my reputation, is very in tune to the person's body.
I remember out of the corner of my eye seeing potentially an erection.
Do you ever get aroused during these exams?
Do I get aroused during the exam?
Yeah. I was like, okay, so we're going to have to do that more.
Nobody was protecting us.
I think my parents believed him.
I knew it was always going to happen.
What if no one believes me? What if everyone thinks I'm lying?
Those fears go through your head the whole time. What if I'm not believed?
What if I'm not believed? In this podcast, we want to show you how this guy got away from parents, police, and powerful institutions for decades. Because once you know that, you will understand how they missed it and how you might have missed it too. I've reported on the Larry Nassar case for the last couple of years, and so much of what you saw on the news was about his horrific crimes. And when you're watching this guy in shackles and an orange jumpsuit, it is really easy to forget why everybody trusted him. So in this first episode, we are going to show you how he earned that trust. This is a training video Nassar put up on YouTube a few years ago.
An activity I like to use as a strength test, as well as a strengthening exercise, is what's called the double leg lower down test. The athlete raises their legs up towards the ceiling, and then the coach...
This guy looks like your typical suburban dad. He is silly, he is friendly, he is good at his job. He is a white guy in a polo shirt with his cell phone holstered to his belt.
Videos like this are why I can't stop thinking about this case. As a mom, when I think about my two sweet little girls, I really hope I would be able to spot someone like Larry Nassar, but I don't know.
And that's the thing, right? You are not stupid. You're an extremely good, vigilant mom. And we all think that we have these really good bullshit detectors. But I listened back to tapes of Larry Nassar before he got caught, and my bullshit detector does not go off. We're going to let you hear what I'm talking about coming up in just a minute. Listen to this podcast from a few years ago. It's hosted by Jessica O'Byrne. It's a cult hit. It's called Gymcastic.
The number one gymnastics podcast ever in the history of humankind, bringing you the most fascinating people on the gymternet.
So after that 96 Olympics with Carrie Strug, Nassar goes from being a trainer with the Olympic team to its top doctor. He also becomes a professor of medicine at Michigan State University. Anybody who is anybody in gymnastics knows who this guy is. So if you could get Larry on your gymnastics podcast, that was a get, man.
I'm just going to tell you that I'm totally biased in this interview, completely and totally biased, because I just love Larry Nassar, and I don't know when he sleeps, honestly, but he's great. I'm going to stop going on and on about how awesome he is. Because
on the podcast, Jessica says that watching Larry work is like watching Inspector Gadget. He is always doing a million things at once. But Larry told Jessica he had one very simple motto.
Gymnast first. Gymnast first. Gymnast first. Nothing, nothing, nothing gets in the way of gymnast first. Gymnast centered, their health, physical and mental. Then comes everyone else. Everything else is secondary.
This attitude made Larry a unicorn, because in gymnastics, even the best careers are brutal and short. By the time your kid is two, coaches are watching like hawks for something that they can mold. By age six, they know which kids have it and which ones don't. And by the time you're out of college, your body is just done, man. You are Brett Favre doing infomercials. So for those fleeting years in between, no matter how bad you're hurt, you suck it up. But on that podcast, Larry talked about pushing back against screaming coaches and demanding parents.
You have to protect your athletes. You have to let them know that we care. You have to not let them know, but let them feel it. Let them understand it. Let them breathe it. It's there. You know, it's not just a pat on the back. You know what I mean? It has to be sincere.
Larry was the guy who saw you, who protected you. This is how he earned your trust.
And you screw up once with one of those gymnasts, and it'll spread like wildfire. If you do something where you break their train of trust, you're done.
Maybe you noticed we're calling him Larry. That's what most everyone called him. Coaches, patients, their parents. It tells you something about how much they trusted him.
And I want you to be able to separate this guy, Larry, in your mind from the Nassar on the news. Because that guy in court, he doesn't have any power anymore. But when it's one-on-one, when it's Larry, this beloved dude, that's where his power came from. It was always just one-on-one.
Don Homer called him Larry.
Who did I trust to keep his eye on her? Larry. I knew Larry would not let her be hurt.
Don first met Larry in the late 1980s. Up until the very end, she thought of Larry as family. Her three girls were little then, munchkins doing tumbling class for fun. Larry was an athletic trainer working at their gym on top of his work for USA Gymnastics. Dawn just wanted the girls to burn off some extra energy, especially her oldest, Trine. She was jumping off the back of way too many couches. This is a home video from the early 90s. Trine is wearing the team leotard, long sleeves, red and white stripes. Dawn would watch from the bleachers with a mix of awe and fear.
And she would just give a little nod, just set her bottom lip, and off she would go.
Dawn would watch Trine launch her tiny body from the springboard into the air, arms thrusting off the vault.
It was always just amazing to watch, to think that, geez, that's my little girl out there jumping around.
And winning.
And winning.
Did you catch that? Trine flashes her mom a smile and says, and winning. Trine loved winning. But in gymnastics, winning means sacrifice. Her mom, Dawn, remembers the coaches hosting a big meeting at the gym.
They said 100% of your children will be injured. 100%, whether it's a sprained toe or a broken back, you're going to have everything in between. So we have a trainer that's available for the Great Lakes Gymnastics girls. So my mind, I'm thinking, yes, we're in good shape here. If Trine gets injured, there's somebody there to help take care of her.
That somebody was Larry Nassar. He'd make you laugh while he iced down your bruises, taped up your shin splints. We talked to Trine, too. She says he even smuggled in candy in his equipment bag.
He'd walk in with his big old duffel bag, and it always smelled like, why not get a flipping new duffel bag, bro? It's disgusting. But he'd walk in and, you know, we'd get, you know, you'd come back and if you were sad or crying, you'd get a Skittle.
One Skittle. Just one. She likes strawberry the best. And she needed Larry. They all needed Larry. Gymnastics is punishing. Spend enough hours hoisting your body up and over those wooden gymnastics bars. Eventually, the skin on your palms rips right open.
It is extremely painful. You bleed. I mean, it's not your favorite moment, but the only way to get through the rip is to do the bars on the rip.
Trine's mom, Dawn, remembers big end-of-season gymnastics parties where girls had to hold out their hands, show their rips to get into the party.
They were badges of glory. Glory. That's how gymnastics gets in their head.
Trine's worst injury happened the summer before sixth grade when she flung right off the upper bar, landed on her face, chin, and neck. She remembers laying still on the mat in a pool of her own blood until an ambulance came. Trine broke her nose. She was in an arm sling and neck brace. Kids at school thought she'd been in a car accident. And through it all, who was there to help her heal? Larry.
He taped my ankles. He taped my shins. He taped my wrists. He worked on my shoulder. And it works. It actually makes you better. So, you know, I mean, you don't become the Olympic team doctor by taping ankles well. You have to be able to make these girls comfortable enough to compete and to compete well and to win, most likely. So he was like in his own weird, goofy Larry way, like magic.
Larry's was the first face she saw after waking up from an emergency surgery when she was 16. She was so relieved when Larry said, "You're going to be okay, kid." Trine and Dawn watched Larry's career take off after the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, the one where he helped Carrie Strug bring home the gold. Larry brought back all kinds of gifts and mementos to give his club girls back home in Michigan. Trine remembers worrying Larry was getting so famous he might leave her gym. Because the truth is, you could know Larry all your life, like Trine and Dawn did, and never think of him as anything but the good guy. We're going to come back to Trine's story in a later episode.
But for now, what you have to know is that Trine and Dawn were not alone. If your parents couldn't pay Larry Nassar, he would treat you for free. The youngest of five in a devout Catholic family, Larry taught Sunday school. Once, his family says, he ran barefoot across the street in the winter to help a neighbor having a heart attack.
It took decades to expose Larry Nassar, to break the good guy spell. Not that lots of women and girls didn't try.
I remember just feeling embarrassed, like, oh my God, I made this report. It was a mistake, and he's going to be mad at me. My parents are going to be mad at me. The police are going to be mad at me.
How Larry talks his way out of trouble with the police. That's next time on Believed. If you want to know more about this story, head to michiganradio.org/believed. There, you can find out how that podcast host, Jessica O'Byrne, feels about her interview with Larry Nassar now and why she thinks everybody needs to hear it. It's late on a fall evening, dark, September 16th, 2004. A 17-year-old girl walks towards the bright lights of a hospital in Lansing, Michigan. She's with her mom and a police officer.
I mean, I show up in the emergency room. They bring me through the main entrance, and I actually see a kid from my high school sitting there.
This guy from her high school has a broken arm or something, and she remembers he spots her with the police.
And he's just looking at me like, what is going on? And I just was terrified. I was like, oh my gosh, everyone's going to find out. Everyone's going to think something's going on.
Breanne Randall-Gay has just come from the police station where she reported what Dr. Larry Nassar did to her. The police want her to go straight to the local hospital for a rape exam.
Breanne remembers the emergency room is packed. But the police escort means Breanne skips the line, goes right back into an exam room.
And the nurse gives her a pelvic exam and also asks a lot of very personal questions.
I do remember telling the nurse, saying to her, you know, what if no one believes me? What if everyone thinks I'm lying? And she said, you know, people who are lying about this don't have the details like you have. And this man's going to lose his license. And it's so weird to me now, but I remember feeling so guilty after that. I was like, I even think I told her something like, I don't want that to happen, thinking I made a mistake and feeling guilty for ever reporting him.
In this episode, we're taking you back 13 years before Dr. Larry Nassar would admit in court that he sexually abused children.
This incident with Breanne in 2004, it'll show you not just what Larry was doing to so many of his patients, but how he got away with it again and again. I'm Lindsay Smith.
And I'm Kate Wells. You're listening to Believed, a podcast about how Larry Nassar abused so many for so long.
That September, Breanne was a senior at Hazlitt High School. Hazlitt is a small town just 5 miles away from Michigan State University, where Larry worked. After school, she'd hop in her little silver Dodge Neon.
I called it like the silver bullet because it was just super tiny, but it did the job for the time.
On the way home from school, she'd rock some Britney Spears. At home, she'd do her homework, catch the countdown on MTV. A few days a week, she'd head to her part-time job making sandwiches at Quiznos.
Breanne took the silver bullet to a lot of doctor's appointments, too, because Breanne has scoliosis, which means her spine is curved instead of straight. And by the time she was in high school, Breanne's battling chronic back pain. She would spend 3 days a week at physical therapy, the chiropractors.
She quit soccer and tennis. They were considering surgery.
But then a specialist said, you know what, try seeing a sports medicine doctor. So Breanne's mom, Ellen Speckman Randall, asked around for a good one.
And it pretty much came back, you want Nassar. Nassar's the one to see. He's the Olympic doctor. And so I thought, well, I'm probably not going to be able to get in, but let me give it a try.
Dr. Larry Nassar is fresh off a big trip to Athens. He was with the U.S. women's gymnastics team at the Olympics there. By September 2004, Larry is back at his normal job on clinical duties at Michigan State University's Sports Medicine Clinic. And just as a reminder, we're calling him Larry because it's important to think about him not as Nassar, the guy you saw on the news, but as Larry, the trusted, beloved, goofy doctor. Everyone called him Larry.
Breanne was never a gymnast, but Larry sees a lot of other athletes, too. And they luck out. Ellen is, in fact, able to get them an appointment. And that first appointment goes great. Larry is super nice. He thinks he can help. Ellen feels like they have finally hit the jackpot. And so they schedule a second appointment.
At her second appointment, Breanne goes by herself.
I think the very first thing that seemed off was him having me undress for a massage.
Larry hands Breanne these little tearaway shorts, Velcro up the sides. Larry has Breanne lay on the exam table, on her stomach.
I think I had a sheet over me, and he just began massaging my back.
Larry uses his elbow to push hard on her low back, even on her butt. Breanne winces in pain. Larry asks her, does this hurt? And she's like, yes, definitely.
He said, oh, okay, well, let me do something to release the pressure in your back. And he said, I'm going to give you a wedgie.
Larry rips open the Velcro on one side of Breanne's shorts. Underneath, she's got on a pair of white underwear. So Larry moves the side of her underwear, exposing her butt cheek. He's not wearing gloves. He hasn't told her what he's about to do. For several minutes, his hands are just massaging her butt cheek, skin on skin.
I just felt uncomfortable at that point. I felt exposed.
Breanne feels Larry's right hand drift further down below her butt. And then he's pressing his bare fingers really hard up against her crotch.
I felt like he was going to try to penetrate me because he was going in that direction until he felt the tampon.
Breanne is on her period.
At that point, he just put his fingers and kept his fingers at the entrance of my vagina.
Breanne stays very still. She can't believe what's happening. She's silent.
When I said something hurt, then he would go further. You know, when he was being too rough on my back, the way he treated my discomfort with that was to put pressure on my vagina. And so I was worried that if I said that hurt, that he would go even farther.
She doesn't know how long this goes on. Eventually, Larry asks her again, does this hurt? Breanne lies.
I said no because I was terrified of what he would do to try to release the pressure again.
Breanne lays there on her stomach, butt exposed. She's 17 years old and she's alone with Dr. Larry Nassar. She braces herself, waits for the pain to stop. And she's trying to rationalize what Larry is doing to her. There's got to be a logical explanation.
And I felt like I should just let him do what he needed to do to heal me. And that he was a doctor. He knew what he was doing.
She thinks, this must be one of those things doctors do that hurts, but it's good for you. Like a root canal or a pap smear.
It's not comfortable, but in the end, it's to help you. And so I just assumed that that's what he was doing it for.
But then Larry moves his hand from her vagina up to her neck. No gloves. She hasn't seen him wash his hands. Face down on the table, Breanne feels his hands on her ribs. His hand slides down her side. He palms her breast.
And at that point, I was just very uncomfortable and just kind of froze.
With Breanne frozen, Larry rubs and squeezes her breast for what felt like 15 full minutes. Then he stops, turns away from Breanne, looks like he's taking some notes and a clipboard.
After he was done with his so-called procedure, he had me dress in front of him. So he stayed in the room and watched me get dressed. And I remember just trying to turn the other way to try to shield myself.
Breanne is so disoriented. She wants to just run out of there. But Larry is trying to schedule weekly appointments with this teenage girl. They're talking about dates and times. And when she's finally able to leave that exam room, Larry gives her a big hug.
After the appointment, Breanne drives to school. She's late for lunch. The cafeteria at Hazlitt High School is packed with teenagers. There are flyers from the homecoming dance up on the walls. Everybody's eating. Everybody's clustered around big round tables.
I don't remember eating at all. I don't think I ate anything.
The table Brianne normally sits at with her friends was full, so she grabs a chair, squeezes in, and she just unloads it, tells all of her friends about the crazy, gross thing her doctor just did to her.
I honestly don't know what made me even say something to a group that big. I think I was just so distraught by it. I needed to tell someone, and I needed to say something because I was trying to work this out in my head.
Brianne will never forget the look of shock on her friends' faces.
I remember one of them specifically said, "Oh, wow, I've seen him before. You know, I definitely shouldn't go back to see him, and that doesn't sound right. You should tell your mom about it." So I actually called my mom. I left the lunch table.
And she said, "Mom, what happened at the doctor's today was terribly wrong." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And she told me about, you know, how he had massaged her breast. He had put his finger inside of her. He'd had her change her clothes while he was in the room.
She was pretty shocked and said, "Okay, when you come home from school, we're going to talk about this more."
At home, later that night, Brianne and Ellen sit down. She tells her mom everything.
I think I hadn't fully realized that it was wrong. I felt like it was weird. And I was like, "Oh, wow, my mom's taking this really seriously."
And I said, "Well, what do you want to do? What do you think we should do?" And she said, "I want to go to the police." So, okay, we're going.
They went to police that very night, then to the hospital for the rape exam that we told you about earlier. The next step is for the police to question Dr. Larry Nassar.
It takes about 2 weeks for a detective named Andrew McCready to sit down with him for an interview. McCready still works for Meridian Township's police department. Meridian is where Brianne's appointment was.
And McCready wouldn't talk to us, and there are no tapes of his interview with Larry.
What we have is McCready's written police report from 2004. In that report, Larry lays out his defense. It'll become a go-to for Larry, one he will use again.
Larry's account of what happened at Brianne's appointment is one single paragraph. The police report starts like this. Quote, "Dr. Nassar advised me he had indeed touched Brianne Randall in the perineum, applying pressure with his fingers as he did so," unquote. Larry explains this is a legitimate medical procedure.
At the bottom of the police report is a 25-page long PowerPoint Larry provided. Yes, a PowerPoint. It's one of several presentations Larry created for speaking engagements, lectures he gave at medical conferences, and apparently to defend himself.
It's one of the many things I think that fooled the officer.
This is Meridian Township Police Chief Ken Plaga.
Plaga wasn't chief back in 2004, but he has reviewed Brianne's case.
And he says, look, here you've got a doctor at the top of his field explaining this complex medical procedure and providing evidence.
I think that, you know, you bring in this PowerPoint with demonstrations of the actual procedure that are part of that PowerPoint where you see the hands inside the groin area, similar to what was explained by the victim, by Brianne, by several of the victims. You know, here it is. I teach this.
This is one of Larry's moves. Create confusion. Blur the lines between his abuse and legitimate medical techniques.
Larry would treat patients who had injuries like a heel fracture or a shoulder sprain with his so-called pelvic manipulations. He's not even certified to treat the pelvic floor, but your average patient may not know any of this.
Which is why we're going to take a minute here, because you need to understand what real pelvic floor treatment looks like, so you can see how it is miles away from what Larry was doing to his victims.
The pelvic floor is a group of muscles inside your pelvis. They hold your bladder and other internal organs like a sling. You use your pelvic floor to control your bladder. Treating pelvic floor dysfunction can include exercises, stretching, and sometimes manual manipulation. I know people who get pelvic floor treatment. They're big fans. And that's why we had to talk to an expert to get some answers.